You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Mysteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Welcome to Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Mysteria Lane to visit the Desperate Housewives. I'm Julia, and I'll be watching this series for the first time.
And I'm Jordan, and I am a veteran of Wisteria Lane, seen the show more than one time all the way through.
And today, we're going to be watching and recapping Season 1, Episode 3, titled Pretty Little Picture.
We're on a roll here. We're on Episode 3. We're diving in, getting into the good stuff.
Yeah, things picked up last episode. Mm-hmm. We hope that you've been following along. We split that pilot into two separate episodes, part one and part two. Last time, we just went balls to the wall and did all of episode two in our review. So we hope you listened to that. It's been a great time. We hope that you're watching along with us. You can do that on either Hulu or through Amazon Prime through IMDb TV. It's not a requirement. We would love if you do. But if not, we are more than happy that you are along with us just listening and enjoying our content. We hope that you're enjoying our audio content, but we also do have content across all of our platforms, including Instagram at DesperatePod and on Twitter at Desperate_pod.
You can also email or message us through our email address, which is at desperatepod@gmail.com. And then we do have a website as well where you can kind of see links to all these places that you can reach out to us. So desperatepod.com. On top of that, you know, if you are enjoying our show, we ask that you please, please rate us on Apple Music. 5 stars are always appreciated. But we want to hear your feedback. We want to discuss. So message us, rate us, utilize these tools of communication.
Send us smoke signals. Yeah. I think it's iTunes now that we've said Apple Music a bunch of times.
I thought iTunes is dead.
Is it?
I don't know
what it is, but just rate us. Just go on Yelp.
Just like find us somewhere where you can give us a rating and do it.
Just go on Yelp. My friend told me that she's in the Yelp Elite. And I was like, what is that? And she's like, it just means I review a lot and they like give me free stuff. And I'm like, how many reviews have you done? And she was like, well, definitely under 100. And I was like, whoa, I was expecting like 15.
I know. I'm like 100.
I feel like these women on Wisteria Lane are up on Yelp. I feel like they're all in the Yelp Elite. We've learned a lot about them. We hope that you've been keeping up. If not, we are just so happy that you're tuning in episode 3. We promise you it's a wild ride. You might be a little bit confused. You'll get on board real fast. So we're going to take you through a quick recap of where we're at. So you're not totally in the dark. You're not free falling into Wisteria Lane. So far, Mary Alice Young committed suicide in the pilot. And this sparked a lot of mysteries for the women. We got to see in depth into all their lives and maybe some things that they were hiding. Things are not as picture perfect as they look on Wisteria Lane. And Mary Alice's death unveiled that. We have Susan Mayer and her daughter Julie at the wake of her friend. She met Mike Delfino, which will never not be shocking.
I know, to pick up a man at a wake.
Yeah. So she met him there. She has a major crush. She's trying to get in there like swimwear. And Edie, maybe the hottest woman in this entire show, is her competition. Also has a crush on Mike Delfino. And they are in the thralls of going after him. And Susan accidentally burned Edie's house down trying to
quick side note.
She ruined somebody's life trying to get this man. And Mike Delfino, we don't really know who he is. He just moved to town and he has some secrets of his own. So that's what's going on with Susan and Edie. Edie's homeless because her house burned down. And then we have Gabrielle Solis. She's married to Carlos. She's been hooking up with her underage gardener who doesn't have a bank account. Doesn't have a bank account.
Not confirmed, but it's confirmed.
He's 16 years old, and it's pretty gross. I gave her Housewife of the Week last week, and I think I might be regretting it.
It was now that I've slept on it.
It was in the moment. I was like, I don't know. Gabby was looking really good in her little bonnet and her sunglasses and her two different heels, but that's the main thing that's going on in Gabby's life. There's not a lot of mystery there. It's just she's hiding this affair from her husband and all of her neighbors, and that's the only thing in her life keeping her going.
We also have two other housewives. So Lynette, our resident stressed mother of the group, last episode she basically had her kids just acting up. She almost got a ticket. She threatened a cop. I think he was going to pull a gun on her. So there was some nice social commentary there.
There was.
Yeah. But she's white, so he didn't pull the gun. Yeah. I think that's key here.
If we remember one thing about this episode.
It's the cop was not going to shoot the blonde white lady.
The timestamp of 2004.
Yeah. So basically she pulls a little threat, basically leaves her kids on the side of the road for about 5 minutes and to scare them. And it ends up turning into a fiasco with some big old broad coming for her to report her to social services.
She neglects her kids.
Yeah, she's got anger issues. But, you know, we see Lynette at peak stress there. And then Bree, our fourth housewife, she is in marriage counseling with her husband, Rex, and he's extremely unreasonable, and we definitely think that there is an undiagnosed OCD problem there. She's trying, though. We respect it. She has a lot of opinions on Freud, and basically she's unappreciated. Classic unappreciated housewife with an unreasonable husband who decided that she's the every problem in their marriage for some reason.
Yeah, he's constantly angry, constantly yelling. Most of these husbands are, I have to be real.
They got bad attitudes.
My theory is that this show is not about desperate acts. It's about women who are too good for their husbands. And my fantasy, now that we've recapped what happened, my fantasy for Bree is that, and I'm smiling as I say this, I feel like really good about this.
Ooh, I'm excited. I want to hear this.
I'm like giddy.
Yeah.
My fantasy is that she, after being in marriage counseling and talking it over with Dr. Goldfein, she is reinvigorated and a spark in her is reignited to pursue education. And she goes back to get her master's degree because I know this girl has a bachelor's.
Oh, yeah.
She goes back to get her master's in psychology and like leaves Rex to do something just much better.
I love this.
And I'm so excited about that fantasy. Yeah, it was a great episode 2. It was a great pilot. So we are hoping that the greatness continues with episode 3, which we'll be watching today. Like I said, we hope that you watch along. We're going to take a quick break and go watch it. You can pause us and do that too, then mm-hmm. come back for our hot takes. Or maybe you've already watched it and you just want to listen through with us. Mm-hmm. Whatever really floats your boat.
Yeah, whatever floats that boat.
We're open to everything. Anything else before we dive in?
I mean, I think we kind of hit all those points. I'm excited to see, you know, pretty little picture. I'm intrigued.
Ooh, we did forget one thing. We maybe need to recap Paul.
You're right. The suspect, main mystery of the season.
Suspect husband.
Suspect husband. Suspect number one.
Paul, who was Mary Alice Young's husband. Mm-hmm. He's also one of the angry, yelling husbands all the time. Last we saw him, he was suspect from the beginning because he didn't accept with open arms those muffins that Brie made. But episode 2, he got even more suspect when Susan went over to their house and was trying to have a conversation with him just about this note that they found. Mm-hmm. Which, oh yeah, I guess if you haven't been keeping up, they found this suspicious note in the pilot.
Yeah.
That makes them wonder if Mary Alice killed herself because she was depressed or she was being blackmailed. And so they found this note. Susan wanted to talk to Paul about the note. He was not down whatsoever to talk about that note. As he was not even boxing up, he dug up a trunk from under his pool, drained the pool, dug up the trunk, was in his garage wrapping it in plastic with duct tape. While Susan was there talking to him about it.
Which is crazy.
Talking about the note, wanting to address something super serious. And he like stormed away in his car. And then he threw that trunk over a bridge into some water where it wasn't going to sink. So whatever secret was in there was definitely going to be found. And we see it pop back up somewhere down the riverbed or wherever he threw it at the end of last episode. So that's what's going on with Paul.
The worst possible criminal. I don't know what we're supposed to take away from that, but he's bad at hiding things.
Yeah, I think Jordan and I would be more competent at really burying a body, burying whatever, committing a crime, digging something up from under your pool, which you could have just left. Well, first of all, we would have just avoided this whole thing. We would have never dug up what was under our pool.
Someone must have seen him with a pickaxe in his pool being like, that's suspicious. What the hell?
So last episode we had a thesis that was like, how well do you really know your neighbors? How well do you really know anybody? And they addressed it pretty well, I think, in the storylines. It was great.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see what we have in store for today.
With all those recaps being done and all the business being covered, go rate, review, follow, do whatever you'd like. Send us love notes, send us flowers,
stalk us,
do whatever,
threaten us,
yeah, whatever. Just invade my
just
life.
Give us attention.
Yeah, we just really like attention.
Toxic attention, yeah. Healthy attention, give it to us.
We'll take it all. Yeah, with all that business covered, we're gonna go hit it. Like we always say, I think we're just going to keep saying it. I don't know where it came
I like
from.
It.
I don't know if I don't know where it came from, but y'all better buckle up.
Buckle up.
So we'll be back in a moment with our hot takes.
Season 1, Episode 3, Pretty Little Picture. The gals decide to execute the dinner late Mrs. Mary Alice Young never went through with. Susan's ex-husband, Carl, stops by the neighborhood, leaving Susan in a very vulnerable position with Mike Delfino. Gabrielle is blackmailed by a little lady on the lane, her 9-year-old neighbor. Lynette goads Tom to attend the dinner party with her despite his supposedly busy schedule. Bree and Rex try to hide their marriage counseling from their neighbors, but reach a breaking point.
And we're back.
We are back.
That was a loaded episode. We got a lot of good stuff in that episode.
I feel like they were preparing me the last two episodes, but could I have ever been prepared?
I think this is the first time. I mean, it's not, I think. This is the first time we've seen pretty much all the housewives with their significant others, except for one, in the same room. So that was a fun dynamic.
Yeah, and we meet Carl, who we have talked the most shit on.
Oh my god, I have like so much to say about Carl, and when we get there, I have a money question. So when we get there,
we meet Carl, yeah. And Carl is just as he looks exactly like I imagined he would. Like he was cast perfectly.
He was cast perfectly. We're just gonna have to wait till we get to that part of the storyline because I don't want to deep dive into Carl quite yet, but. Very glad that we finally get to put a face to that name.
Yeah, and we meet his secretary, Brandy. That's a very 2000s name.
Yes.
Brandy. We hope that you guys enjoyed it. We hope that you're feeling some feelings about it because mm-hmm. we certainly are. Like all the other episodes, we open with Mary Alice Young. And this is my favorite thing about this series. As we've watched 3 episodes now, mm-hmm. I mean, Mary Alice forever. Sickest job to Brenda Strong is her name.
Yeah, it's like the best gig.
We're about to shoot her DM. Can you come on?
Please.
Don't wear your bra. Yeah. Braless Wonder.
Braless Wonder from Seinfeld.
This opening is great. Her monologues always slap. Props to those writers. You guys were slaying. Hope you won tons of Emmys for this. But Mary Alice is really selling me on death at this point. With her opening monologue.
Oh, she's making it sound so chill. Like we said before, you get to spy. There's no repercussions. You can talk whatever shit you want. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it is working out for her. It's doing some type of work. She opens, she says, after dying, I surrendered the parts that weren't necessary. My desires, beliefs, ambitions, doubts. And I'm like, so you had an ego death. Sick. I've been trying to have one. Like... And it helps to travel lightly when you're moving through eternity, so shed that shit. But she held on to her memory, and it's astonishing to look back at the world she left behind. She remembers it all, every detail, and she is just telling us here that she is thriving watching these women on the big screen from the afterlife. But she notices every detail, and this leads us to her talking about Bree, who is very detail-oriented, mm-hmm. maybe has OCD, confirmed. We have diagnosed her with OCD. And she says, I remember Bree, her easy confidence, the gentle elegance of her hands. And I'm like, Jordan, why don't you ever notice that about me?
I'm going to start watching your hands. And I'm going to tell you when they're extra elegant.
Gentle elegance. I had a compliment from an ex. He was like, you have great hands. He
I
didn't.
I don't think I've ever gotten, like, I don't think anyone's ever clocked, like, noticed anything about my hands. I'm like, that's so sad.
He didn't know he set himself up to receive pictures of my hands regularly.
Oh, wait. Wait a damn minute. I need to hear more about this, like, hand fetish.
Nothing.
That this man
it wasn't
has.
A fetish. I just did it to, like, fuck with him. I'm like, yeah, if you ever need a hand model, like, here's my portfolio. And I would just send him pictures of my hands, like, places. So, just in front of random shit.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, you know how you can like a picture on your messages? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes he didn't like them all. And I was like, so do you think that picture of my hand is ugly or something?
He's like, does my hand look fat? Like, yeah. What's going on? Is my hand bloated today? Like, what's going on?
Do you still like me?
Yeah.
Like,
what are we? What even are we?
What are
if
we?
If you don't like my hand pictures, we can't be together.
And like, why only some and not all? Like, I don't know. But Mary Alice is like, Brie had a gentle elegance of her hands, the warmth of her voice, which I think is the highest compliment. Mm-hmm. I hope somebody comments. If you're going to rate and review us, say that
we need to hear about how you feel about our voices.
Warm voices, yeah. Please. And remembers most her shit husband. The look of fear in Bree's eyes that is caused by her shitty ass husband, Rex. Mary Alice doesn't say it like that, but that's what she meant.
She basically did. She might as well.
Might as well. Brie is frantic. She's struggling because this look of fear in her eyes is because Brie realized that her world was unraveling, we hear Mary Alice say, and she despised loose ends.
Yes.
Writers, check mark, gold star. Dunked on that. It's a monologue. So that's how we open. Mary Alice Young remembers how afraid Brie was, and all of her friends were afraid, I guess. And what a waste. To live in fear is to not live at all.
I think that, like, so clearly this episode focuses on fear and how, like, these women face the various fears and, like, that come up in this episode, I guess. And so yeah. I think, like, last episode had that thesis. I think this one's set up really well, like, what we're diving into and what we're going to get.
Yeah, I would say that this is more of the thesis. Last time we had the thesis a little bit later, mm-hmm. when the ladies were talking. I'd say Mary Alice sets it up great here. There will always be those who face their fears, and there will be those who run away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's relatable. I don't think we said this in our intro. If you're just joining, we're not housewives.
We are not housewives.
Far from it. We're single ladies living in LA. Mm-hmm. I think our gauge is this relatable to us, even though we're not housewives? I think it's relatable to everybody. Like, what do you do when you're afraid? What do you do in the face of fear? How do you handle it? How do you handle any situation? And as we go into this episode, we see how these ladies, what their fears are, what they do to handle it. And some of it's absurd, as always. It's a soapy melodrama.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of it is very telling, and
I found like pretty much all the situations they were running into to be relatable in some way. Like,
yeah,
maybe not. Of course, we don't we've not been divorced, so we have not experienced like certain things that they're facing. But I think we've been through breakups, and we've been through like, I don't know, the types of things that they've been through. And I really like this episode for that reason. I think like I could relate to a lot of what they were saying.
Yeah.
More so maybe than I did last episode, because I think like the concept of fear is very universal.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this episode, the fears that they face are relationship based, and we can all kind of apply those to various previous relationships we've been in.
Yeah, I definitely have tried to hide my affair by buying the affections of my 9-year-old neighbor.
Maybe that's the one I have.
It was like too close to home.
That one was like, yeah, that was the real winner. I was actually the 9-year-old in that situation. Yeah.
We could try and give a quick recap of what happened before we dive into their full storylines, but I was referencing Gabby's storyline there. She is still hooking up with a 16-year-old without a bank account named John Roland, a.k.a. John Tucker. He just tells her his name is John Roland.
Yeah.
And a 9-year-old neighbor sees them, and she spends the rest of her time trying to buy off this 9-year-old.
Also, I want to note that kid is only 7 years younger than John. Sick.
They're in the same generational. Yeah.
Gabby's at least range. 30, so she's basically double his age.
Yeah. And then we have Susan, and we meet Carl, like I referenced earlier. And he comes around, and she's trying to deal with letting him go.
The anger she feels towards him.
Yeah, that's her main thing. Brie and Rex are still involved in marriage counseling.
But they're trying to hide it.
They're trying to hide it, and it's maybe not going as well as they thought. And Lynette is dealing with Tom and trying to help him understand what she goes through every day, trying to gauge if they're happy or not as well.
Yeah, I think she's trying to figure out, like, what even is her life at this point with what is their marriage? Like, what is she even doing?
Yeah, and all the women are still mourning. We were happy to see. I think we're happy
they
anytime.
Still give a fuck.
Yeah, we're happy to see anytime they remember Mary Alice because they moved on too fast, pilot episode.
Yeah.
But they are still mourning, and they see that there's a dinner party on their calendar that Mary Alice planned that they all kind of forgot about. and they decide to throw this party in her honor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on with them. So we kick off with the ladies on a morning, a regular morning, mm-hmm. in Wisteria Lane. It's October 14th, I noted. Maybe that's wrong. It's October sometime.
Yeah, but sometime in 2004.
Mary Alice takes us through the morning, and she says Lynette reads the business section because she will never forget her true calling. Once again, fuck Tom. Because she's a businesswoman.
That's what her passion is.
We see too many businessmen here. We have one businesswoman, but she's reading the business section. Gabrielle studies the fall collection, also mourning her former life as a model. Bree searches for decorating ideas, just anything to bring Rex back to bed. And Susan scanned the front page because she's a ditz, I guess. And
she just reads the headlines. Like, she doesn't read articles.
My girl. Never. Yeah, she's reading those headlines. Mm-hmm. And the date catches her eye, which I thought it said October 14th. It's sometime
that sounds
October.
Right.
Yeah, and it's the date of Mary Alice's dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Alice, we believe, was Susan's best friend.
They seem to be the closest.
Yeah, we can't tell if any of them are friends, but Susan was certainly vibing with Mary Alice to mm-hmm. a degree. And so this throws her off. She's sad. She remembers that her friend died, maybe for the first time all week, because they seem to just be unaffected. And this leads us to a flashback scene.
Yeah, so it's basically all the ladies, like, playing cards. And it appears to be about a month prior to this dinner party, so not really that long before Mary Alice killed herself.
Yeah, it's not too long. I didn't get the exact date. I was like, what the fuck, they're playing cards midday? But I guess if you're unemployed and you have other unemployed ladies,
just gamble away their husband's money. Well, they talk about how they've never had a dinner party with all the couples. And I'm like, so are they can't have been that close of friends, because this just seems weird to me that up until this recently, they've never all gotten together like that. I mean, like, clearly the ladies have, but you just think that dinner party would have happened by now. Especially Brie. I feel like Brie would have thrown one by now.
They are talking about this dinner party. They're like, should we make something? Mary Alice is like, no. She's an OG. She steps in. I got this. I'm going to make everything. Come on over. And in the reality, they're just Susan's at Lynette's house. Mm-hmm. And they all get together outside her house by a tree. And they're like, should we have this dinner party? That's the question that sparks off all the events.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide, yes, they should, after some debate.
Yeah.
Brie is like, isn't that in bad taste? She says that at least once an episode.
At least.
And Lynette is being typical Lynette and is like, well, usually you forget the late hostess's party.
Yeah.
Because they're all like, how could we all forget? Lynette's like, well, of course we forgot. And Susan's like, we have to do it to honor her. This is in remembrance. And they go with this idea. Gabby has to point out that Susan is single. Okay, Gabby's doing a head count. And she's wild. Like, so one, two there, one, two there, one, two. And Susan.
She's so mean about it. I was like, whoa, like, okay, bitch, we know. Like, she's okay. Gabby loves to get her little digs in. And we see it a couple times in this episode, like her attitude towards these ladies.
We don't have any more questions about how Gabby really feels.
I know. And it's Susan's just like, yeah, I'm alone. She looks like a sad puppy. Like, she's just like, I guess it's just me.
She's like, it's not ideal or something. And I'm like, don't let them fuck around with you because you're single. Like, just like, it's not even a bad thing. Like, they all hate their lives.
I don't know. But then, like, they see Mike. Like, she makes eyes at Mike walking his damn dog. It's like the third time we just see her staring at him as he's walking his dog.
He looks like he did the longest run ever. He's so sweaty.
Yeah.
They doused him before that scene.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He makes eyes and they all giggle. And he's so aloof that he's not even feeling himself about this, as they obviously are speaking about him.
Mm-hmm.
She decides then and there that she's going to invite him.
Mm-hmm.
This breaks us up into our storylines. We're going to bring you up to the point of the party and then revisit what happens after, because the party is pretty epic.
Yeah, the party, I think, gets its own little discussion, because one of the greatest lines in any TV series ever.
Oh my God, yes. So like, this line shook my world. It rocked my world.
Crazy. So I'm very excited to discuss that, but I think it needs its own space. So
this line, I think about it like, I'm going to think about it every day.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about it all the time.
Yes.
I hope I say it. And actually, never mind. I'm going to go it's take funny it too far.
Yeah. We'll come back to that. I'm going to come back to that comment.
So Mike Delfino runs by. Susan is feeling all types of ways. And that's where we leave her with the girls. But we pick back up with her as we have a Carl sighting.
basically Carl's picking up Julie, and Susan asks if he can keep Julie for an extra night because she's going to go to this party.
And he looks like your friend's weird dad that was overly inviting to your hot friend.
Okay, I have to ask, do you think Carl's attractive? This is like the big question of the episode.
So
I went back and forth on this one.
Jordan and I both watched that show, The Undoing, on HBO.
Yes.
Not to, like, shout out other shows, but, like, we were both concerned because Hugh Grant... Okay, this is too much insight into who we are, but Hugh Grant plays, like, a murderous husband that you're not sure did he, didn't he murder this person,
yeah,
cheat on his wife, and murder this girl. And Jordan and I were like, he's, like, really attractive, though. Like, this character,
like,
we weren't even like, Hugh Grant is attractive. We were like, this character.
We're like, I'm attracted to this toxic ass man. Like, the most toxic person. Oh, my God. Something. So, yes, our taste is questionable is what I think we're trying to get at here.
Yes, I did think he was hot. Yes, I did think he was hot.
Oh, no, me
in, like,
too.
A weird way.
No, their sex scenes, him and Nicole Kidman. Again, not to tangent too hard, but I was like, that's hot. Like, I'm into it.
It was softcore porn. But yes, I thought that Susan's ex-husband, Carl, was a little bit hot. But I, as I said, he is like your friend's weird dad that is like too inviting.
Too he puts inviting. His hand like on your shoulder.
Yeah.
He touches you.
Yeah, he thinks you're too funny when you're 16. You're like, I'm not that funny.
I just, there's something, I can't. He's like a big man. Like, I don't know how to describe this. He's like a block of a human. Like, his head's really square.
He hits that gym.
I can't decide if I think he's hot or not.
I also wrote, he definitely slides into girls' DMs.
Oh, he's definitely cheating on Brandy. Yeah, so they have like a full-on throwdown here.
Yeah,
well,
so.
He's got his little bimbo girlfriend over leaning on the car, the blonde, who I have to mention is one of the main heiresses in the movie White Chicks. Just
oh,
so everybody
oh
knows.
Oh my gosh. She is.
Yeah, she's like Tiffany or whatever.
Yes.
Yes. I was like, I recognized her and I was like, oh my God, this came out the same year. She had a big year as an actress.
Dang.
White Chicks.
Where is she now?
I did look her up after that. Like, I was like, I have to know. She's been in, like, a lot of TV stuff. Like, she was on House. She has, like, recurring roles on shows, like, a lot of them.
That's really when you've made it as an actor or actress. Like, you're living well just doing little, like, episodes of stuff. You get paid bank for that.
You get paid well. You don't have to deal with, like, the shitty part of fame.
Yeah. Like, you're just famous enough.
Yeah.
You've peaked.
Perfect.
I hope I'm there one day.
Yeah.
Not even an actress. That's not my aspiration. Just hope I'm there randomly.
You're like, if I somehow get there.
Yeah, if I accidentally fall into that, not mad. But Susan's cleaning a window. They're having this blowout. She didn't mean for it to turn into a blowout, but it did.
It just escalates.
Because Carl's going to the mountains with Brandy, and she's like, where is that child support, though? And he's like, it's in the mail. And she opens the mail, and she's like,
that.
Don't see it.
Yes! Get it, girl.
Like, call him out. Brandy's drinking a Mountain Dew or something, and she finishes it as they're all getting in the car and throws it. She's trying to, like,
she's
make
trying to
it
dump
in.
That.
Yeah, like a middle schooler, like, throw it in.
Kobe.
The,
like,
yeah,
when he throws it.
She's like, Kobe. Yeah, she's trying to do that and doesn't make it. So it's embarrassing on her already.
I know. I would, like...
It's embarrassing. It's
this
embarrassing.
Whole, like, situation is just, like, so stupid. Like, I... Like, the bitch turns around like she didn't just fucking throw that shit on the ground.
She ignores it because she's so embarrassed.
Honestly, knows. I would probably do the same.
So, and Susan is pissed. Susan is mad. She's mad. Susan owns this. Brandy needs to pick up this can. She goes, Brandy, pick it up.
Pick up the can,
and
bitch.
She's standing a foot away from it.
I know.
It.
She could literally, like, bend over and pick it
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have to walk.
And Julie's like, Mom, don't. And Susan's like, sit the fuck down.
Yeah. She's like, Julie,
get
back
in the car.
Up.
Yeah. Carl is mad. He's like, don't be petulant. And I'm like, round one, Susan. Nobody's picked up this can yet. I already know, though. Round one, Susan, for calling this out.
Mm-hmm.
Carl actually comes over to pick it up. And Susan's like, no. And, like, kicks the can.
And she's like, now I'm being petulant.
Yeah, she's like, who's being petulant now? Yeah. And then we see Mr. Mike Delfino with Bongo, the dog, not the drum.
With a pair of bongos. He has been doing the music for this entire scene. And he's got Bongo with his bongos.
He's like in his front yard, like yeah. in a drum circle.
He's like Matthew McConaughey over there, just chilling.
Yeah, so he's with his dog, and he's like, he has a sharp eyebrow raise at this, and Susan's embarrassed, and rightly so.
Yeah, I'd be fucking mortified.
I would never fucking show my face.
I guess I'm not dating Mike. Like, that would be a
distant memory so fast. That's where we leave off. I guess Carl and Brandy speed away to their mountain getaway. The next time we catch Susan, she is with Lynette.
Yeah, and they're just, like, discussing what happened. And, I mean, Lynette makes some really good points about just, like, moving on. Like, how can you move on if you're not letting these anger, like, this anger and these bad feelings go?
Yeah, like, I can tell Lynette's, like, been to therapy a couple times.
Lynette seems to be the most, like, well-adjusted.
Yeah.
But also the most miserable, so I don't know.
Yeah, she's, like...
It's, like, she's so aware that her life just sucks.
Well-adjusted to her misery.
Yeah.
Something that really threw me off was Susan says, I left three messages. And I'm like, girl.
Three?
I was like, girl, that's too many. You can leave one message.
One day?
Yeah, I don't think much time has passed. I was like, too many. You should have called once. Let it go. He didn't call her back yet. And she left three messages. And I'm like, what could you have said on the other two messages?
Also, she doesn't even need to leave messages to their neighbors. Like, just wait till he gets home.
Yeah, or just never speak to him again.
Or just never speak to him again.
Just fucking wait until he comes to you. Chihuahua energy. We always say this.
This is peak frazzled, crazy lady energy.
Carl triggers her. Lynette gives her great advice. Next time we see Susan, she's at home alone in her little art studio, which I adore.
I know. I love that she's an illustrator.
Yeah,
that's such a great detail.
Boss job.
That is a great job.
She's talented, creative. She doesn't need Carl.
No.
Should be celebrating. Should still be celebrating that fuckboy free day. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you had a kid with him and I have to see him all the time. And so she's in her studio looking at her photo album. She's called Mike like five more times in my mind. She's called him five more times since this. Not confirmed, but that's my theory.
She's like left him voicemails that say like, ignore my last message. Like, just skip through that.
She's all like, was just thinking about you. Just came across this thing and was thinking about you. Like, she's
like,
so
something's
crazy
on my phone. It keeps calling you. Like, she's trying everything in the book at this point.
Yeah, she's like trying to erase the messages somehow. Mm-hmm. But she's looking at the photo album. She covered every picture of Carl. And that's the level of bitterness I have been at in the past.
She didn't even cover it. She, like, with an X-Acto knife, cut out his face because she pulls out the little head.
I was dying. I'm like, she went so hard.
Yes, that took dedication.
We see how bitter she really is, and we see her in a new light. And she sees herself in a new light. Mary Alice voices over, and it's not flattering.
I, like, have a lot of respect for Susan in this moment where she decides to, like, call Carl. That's hard to say. Call Carl and tell him that, you know, she wants to have that conversation. She wants to talk to him about it.
So instead of calling Mike, she calls Carl, which is maybe what she should have been doing in the first place. Mm-hmm. She's trying to make things right. She offers up time to talk. Can we grab a moment when you're here? It's a very good message.
Yeah.
It's quality. She's setting up a time for them to talk in person. And then she goes above and beyond. She excels. She says, give my best too. And she like chokes up. She vomits first. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, Brandy.
Yeah.
And she can barely even say the name. I imagine her like getting the name wrong for the first 5 months that he dated her on purpose. Mm-hmm. What's her name? Brittany? Like she can never remember, but like truly,
every word under the sun that's not Brandy.
Yeah. She's like cursing that name.
Yeah.
She ends with a hard call me back. She's ready to let go of this anger.
Mm-hmm.
She's almost ready, we should say.
Yeah.
This leads to Carl showing up unannounced.
Which is, like, rude as fuck.
One day early, and I'm bothered.
I'm bothered because, okay, so she, for context, she comes down and she's in a towel because she had just been in the shower. And she opens the door and she's, like, pissed at him. And he's like, we were married for 14 years. I've seen it all before. It's like, shut the fuck up, dude.
Yeah.
You're not married anymore.
This was not okay to me. Susan's in her little pink towel. He's creepy as fuck. Yeah, you may have seen it before, but now it's violating and your relationship can change. You should never do that to a woman.
Like, he left her for his secretary. You don't get to, like, come in and see her naked or in a towel. Like,
and
that's
like,
disrespectful.
It doesn't mean it's comfortable anymore. Like,
no,
she knows that
up.
You probably slid in a million DMs of younger
yes.
women now. It's disgusting. She is nervous because she didn't want him there and she's in a towel. She says, I had a speech prepared. And he goes, well, wing it. Brandy and I have shit to do.
My mind is like, why would he even show up like that if he's not even going to, like, have this his attitude is so closed out to like what this conversation could be. So it's like, why even bother showing up?
Why would you do that? She opened the communication and you came in and kind of shut it down, put her on the spot, made her feel dumb, patronized her, Good look, Carl. Good look. Now we know what Brandy's dealing with and why you probably only date 21-year-old women.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm triggered. Maybe you can tell.
You're like, I'm going to kill this man.
I'm like, do I know you, Carl?
But he's like infuriating and Susan kind of cracks. Like she snaps.
Yeah. Well, Susan does try to wing it at first. And I think that's great effort. Good on her. But I would have told him to get lost. Kick rocks. I'd be like, yeah, I'd be like, come back tomorrow. Like I said. So she's too nice. She starts winging it. And he's over this conversation before it even starts. He's like rolling his eyes. He's at the table. He's wearing like a Tommy Bahama shirt. I don't know if you noticed, like, he looks like he was ready to hit the beach in that shirt.
He looks like he's going to Margaritaville.
Yeah.
Like, what's that guy?
Jimmy Buffett.
He's going to a Jimmy Buffett concert, and then he's going to go get loaded up on some nachos and drink a fuck ton of margaritas at Margaritaville.
Yeah, he looks like he sits too close to you and, like, breathes on you after downing too many margs.
Absolutely.
He's over it, and she says, I need an apology from you for how it ended. And immediately I'm like, sister.
Like, you're not gonna, if you hadn't already got it, you're not getting it now.
You're asking the Lord for things that will not be delivered. I don't know. He's not gonna take responsibility. She says, I need you to take responsibility. He doesn't give it to her. Shocker.
No, he says a couple quotes, like, when talking about Brandy, he's like, the heart wants what it wants.
He screams at her. Yeah. He screams at her, I don't know what to say, Susan. The heart wants what it wants. And she goes, she takes a beat. And she goes, what does that even mean?
She's like, you were married to someone else. It's not about, like, I think what he's not understanding is it's not about the fact that he fell in love with someone else. It's about how he fucking handled the situation. Like, you can fall, like, fine. But, like, break up with the person. Don't do all that shit. Don't fuck your secretary named Brandy, which, by the way, biggest stereotype of all time. It's just so, yeah, it's boring. Like, be more original. When she is freaking out, he says, I suggest you get some help.
This turns everything around. Susan takes it all back real fast in her little pink towel, chases him out of her house. I think he was already, like, halfway to the door.
He was, like, getting up while he's saying
that. She follows him, and she's already dialing Mike. She has a phone in hand. She's like, Mike, I'm leaving you another message. Yeah. Once again, leave you Mike a message. No, she chases him out. He says, you're humiliating yourself. I'm like,
he's not wrong.
I mean, maybe it wouldn't have been humiliating if she just let him walk out, called Mike, and just ate her words and forgot it happened. But she starts screaming at him and says, you humiliated yourself by leaving your wife and daughter. And she pops her head in that car door and she says, you ran out on your family, you're scum. And Carl puts his foot on the gas and takes that little pink towel with him, leaving Susan in the nude in the middle of the street.
Pretty racy for primetime TV. I'm like, she's pretty nude.
This is a whole lot of things happening. So she hides behind a pole and disappears completely because she's so thin.
She has like a crazy body. Yeah. The part where she picks up the plant
and is like scurrying in front of her house.
Her legs are so long and skinny. They like are the same size thigh
as my arm. Oh, I was gonna say as my arm.
I just felt like she has no curvature. Like her legs are just like sticks.
They're thin. They're fit.
And not in a bad way. She looks great.
You're looking great. We're jealous. Yeah, we're admiring.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here like, don't you have an extra key somewhere? I guess you're such a ditz and so quirky that you don't even have an extra key.
Never.
To your house.
She would never have an extra key.
Because she goes around to the back. She's trying to open a window. And I'm like, tight security at this place. She can't open shit, I guess. She can't get in the window. And she falls into her shrub. Guess what time it is? It's a time when Mike walks by.
He's just walking between their homes for some reason. Great view for him.
Yeah,
good for him.
He doesn't look at her, but he like totally saw her vagina.
Yes, he totally. She was like spread eagle.
Yeah, she has her legs like in those medical stirrups, yes. Basically. Mike has been gone all day, he says, but he got her message and he just says message, but I want him to be like, your 10 messages.
Got all of your manic messages, you psycho. Also, now you're naked in front of me.
And he's down. He won't say it, but he's extra down now.
I think Mike's like really cute in this scene. I was like, he's hot. Like when he kind of like is all smug about it, like he's kind of like trying not to look at her. I was like,
He's super cute. He plays this right and he makes a joke about, because she called to invite him to that party, like she told Lynette she was gonna do. He goes, I assume the dress is casual, like wink wink, as her naked body is on the shrub.
He gets some good like jokes about her being nude in this episode because he gets a couple when they roll up to the dinner.
Yeah, he's killing the humor game, the like dad humor game. That's where we leave her before the party, and this is a win. even though all this shit happened with Carl, I'd say this is a big win. Mm-hmm. She's not competing with Edie, so we don't have any rounds to clock. But I'd say Susan's winning this episode against Brandy and also in this situation.
Yeah. We'll come back to Susan after the dinner discussion.
So while this is all happening to Susan, Lynette's going through dramas of her own with her husband because Tom is back in town from business after really us not seeing any of him.
He said he went to 3 cities in 6 days. I'm like, what do you do for a living that you're traveling that much?
Yeah, none of us are certain.
I can't figure this out.
He sells refrigerators was something I might have posed. I thought it was a very 2004 job, like going door to door.
Door to door salesman.
Tom's back in town. He didn't even go to Mary Alice's funeral. That's something I have to point out because Lynette invites him to this dinner they're planning. I'm like, if he didn't go to the funeral, what makes you think he's going to go to this dinner?
Hell no.
No.
And he's so annoying. Like, this scene, like, agitates me because I felt Lynette here. I mean, he's just so careless with what he said. Like, he's allowed to be tired, but to be like, do you have any idea what it's like to work 60 hours a week? It's like, yeah, she has 4 manic children. One of them's a baby.
Dude, she was making double your salary, like, before you made her quit. So you can shut up. She knows what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. She invites him to the dinner, and he's like, she probably said, it's in Mary Alice's honor. And he's like, Mary Alice.
He's like, who is that?
Not ringing a bell. And she's like, my friend that died last week.
Yeah.
He's like,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, so this is what I imagine. Yeah, he says he hasn't unpacked, he needs to chill. And I'm like, Tom used to be a Huntington Beach surfer for sure. He owned a pair of Sanooks, a pair of Vans. He smokes pot in the garage. And Tom will be the cool dad that was like so shit to their mom.
Yes, that is definitely the vibe that I'm picking up from him.
So he says key things like, yeah, the 60-hour work thing. He's not listening to her. And she's like, I got a sitter.
Yeah, he's like, why don't we cancel the sitter, stay in, rent a movie?
It's nice, but it's like not nice because he just insulted her in like 5 different ways.
Yeah, and she wants to do something that gets her out of the house. Like, what does he not grasp?
It ends, this kind of wraps up with her feeling defeated.
Yeah.
And he is like trying to open a Jell-O. He goes to the fridge and grabs a Jell-O, and he can't figure out how to open it.
Yeah, because he's literally a fool.
He has a spoon, and he's like trying to pop it into the bottom or something, and she opens it for him. This is contradictory to everything he says because he's like, it's not hard to take care of the kids, and like, I can figure it out, and he can't even open the Jell-O.
Yeah.
And then the next time Lynette is thinking about this situation, she finds pictures of Tom wearing a sombrero getting margaritas with the buds, and this had me on the floor.
She like loses her fucking mind, and I love it. Like, she comes for his throat.
It's like I have to say the picture was like so dorky though.
It was. Like, if I were her, I'd blow that shit up and pass it around the neighborhood and just embarrass his dumb ass.
Like, she shouldn't even be mad. It was so dorky, and it wasn't like they were at a strip club with like bitches around them. It was just like he was out getting margs and wearing a sombrero and probably
with, like, two middle-aged men.
I mean, even though he's like a surfer bro that probably smokes pot in his garage, I do get the strong impression that he's not like philandering.
No, and I don't think he would cheat on her.
So I think it's funny that this picture is around and she should blow it up and really fuck with him. I would do that forever. But she's a little mad because that conversation was awful that they had, and he was mean about her being a stay-at-home mom and him working
the job that he designated to her.
And she calls it a frat party. She's like, this picture of you at a frat party, and like shows it to him, and I'm like, a frat party would have been cooler maybe. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. He's like, what am I supposed to do, just sit around the hotel and watch TV? She's like, I guess not. But also, I don't expect you to be partying. Like, you come home exhausted and you don't really help me out. So I just need you to be like present. She's not asking much.
One night for us to go out.
Yeah.
And you can't because you're too tired from getting fucked up when you're on your business trips, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's valid. Like I said, Lynette is the most evolved of these mothers and housewives.
I agree.
He makes her a deal, though. He's like, I can babysit. Maybe this is when the Jell-O thing happened. I might be wrong. So Tom doesn't know what he's fucking doing, and it's about to go down. He doesn't even know. Then we see Lynette getting ready for the party, and she's pumped. She's got that face mask on. She's got some curlers in, and she's rocking it. And Tom doesn't even know what's about to hit him. He is still being a doofus to her and is like, it's not brain surgery to take care of the kids. I'm like, has he met his kids?
He hasn't, because he's literally never home.
He didn't watch episode 1 and 2.
No,
he doesn't know.
He needs to listen to our show.
Yeah.
Catch up.
And I'm like, no parent, first of all, none of the parents I know, my own parents, family friends, nobody, none of my friends who have kids, they're not like ever saying it's not brain surgery. They're all fucking exhausted, and they understand that parenting is a huge ordeal.
Yeah, you're caretaking an entire being.
Yeah, it's not brain surgery, but nobody would ever think to describe it that way.
And you know what? It might be like brain surgery when you have 3 young boys and a baby. Like, that sounds complicated to me.
It's certainly an operation.
Yeah.
I don't know. She is out for blood.
She wants to sabotage him.
Lynette is like, I fucking don't like that he went out, and he's going to pay for it.
He's going to fail.
And she did it in a nice way. I think when you're married, you get strategic and tactical about how you're going to get back at your significant other or your partner. So she calls over Preston or Porter or Penny or Party or whatever their names are. They're all P names, the future frat stars. She's like, remember how I said you can't have cookies after 5? And he's like, yeah, because the sugar makes us crazy. And she's like, go at it.
She's like, eat the entire box with your brothers.
She drives to the store really fast and picks up 5 more boxes. And he's about to go ham on those cookies. This is the moment that he's lived for. He'll never forget the night that dad babysat and mom went away and he got to eat all the cookies he wanted.
Oh, yeah.
He threw up.
Like, she probably played herself with this one, though. I feel like, I don't know, long term, like, these kids are going to be like, mom, what about that one time you let us have cookies? Like,
yeah.
I feel like she's going to regret this decision.
He threw up from all the sugar he had that night.
Yeah.
That's where we leave off. She goes to the party, which we're going to hit in a little bit. Gabrielle, what do you guys think she's up to? Never mind, I'll tell you. She's hooking up with John Roland.
She's fucking a teenager, a child.
She's still statutory raping a teenage
a
boy,
minor.
A kid.
A kid.
Yes. That's where Gabby's at.
I think it opens with her and Carlos talking about going to the dinner party and how he doesn't want to go.
None of these men are down to have dinner made for them by Bree Vandingham.
They're such stereotypes. Like, they're so fucking annoying. Like, Mike's the only one that is like, has a good attitude.
Yeah,
about
because
anything.
He's single and he knows that
he
could get laid.
He's
got to
lock it down.
I don't know. Do they think dinner is too feminine or something? I don't understand. None of them ever eat dinner.
Yeah, they're like, a dinner party?
Carlos is not into this idea. Carlos is saying she's too tense. He says, you should go to a spa and relax because you're tense, because you're so upset about me not going to a dinner. And I'm like, she's upset for a good reason. You're kind of just, last episode, she said, you're never home 6 nights a week to eat dinner with me. I'm lonely. Now she invites him to a dinner party to hang out with her neighbors and he won't go.
It's one party too. It's like the one event that she's asking him to go to. He won't go.
And you got to be careful about the verbiage you use with your partners always, because he said a key phrase, find a way to relax. He should have done a harder suggestion, because when she hears those words, find a way to relax, she's like, John Roland.
She's like, I'm going to go fuck my 16-year-old fuck buddy.
Yeah, so she calls the high school, gets an attendance roster of the 16-year-old boys, and, like, picks, I don't know.
No, first of all, this is the first time we see John in school. I'd like to point that out. This is the first time we see him in school.
Oh, I have some key notes about this.
Oh, I'm excited.
Oh, my goodness. She calls John Tucker. She asks where he is, and it's probably, like, 11 a.m., so she knows where he is. He's at school.
He's in high school, bitch, because he's a kid.
But I love how specific he is. And he says algebra.
I'm like, isn't that like freshman year math? I feel like you do, like, I remember algebra and like you have algebra 2.
Either way, he's too old to be in algebra,
yeah,
in my opinion. And
I
we'll hear another class that he's taking soon. And I also have a problem with this class. It's very telling of his intelligence level.
Yeah, they make a nasty joke. I don't like it.
I don't like it. And she's like, are you free at 4? And he's like, I have track. And she's like, run here fast. And I'm like,
she's like, run here, practice.
Disgusting. Yeah. And he goes, want me to keep my gym clothes on? And I've never been more turned off in my life. I'm like, what the fuck is this fantasy? I hate this. I'm like, have you ever smelled a teenage boy?
Without exercise, without them being nasty? Yeah. Like, they're gross already. Like,
they're gross.
It's gross.
They're gross. So that's the grossest conversation ever. It ends, and the next time we see Gabby, she is on the phone, and we cover this in the pilot. You can't forget. You might have forgotten because we haven't touched on it too much. Gabby's Hispanic. I'm Hispanic as well. I picked up on some key things that in case you guys forgot that she's Hispanic. She's on the phone while she answers the door for John, and she's on the phone with her mother. Yeah. She's like, we're driving into town for the baptism, and I'm sorry, like, Aunt Maria is going to have to drive with someone else. And I'm like, is this happening in my household? Aunt Maria and a parent of yours being mad about some situation that probably doesn't matter at all. Like, who's going to drive with who? I'm like, oh, my God. Like, yes, we get it.
She's Hispanic. They nailed it. They nailed this one thing. Yeah, I was like,
they did nail that detail. So we didn't forget she's Hispanic, you guys. She's Hispanic. But John is at the door. She answers, and she orders him to take off his sweaty-ass clothes. I'm like, this must be so rank.
Well, and this is when he makes the joke about biology homework, and then they're going to – she's like, use that knowledge. I don't know. It's gross. Yeah, I couldn't even write it down. It's so gross.
I wrote it down.
Oh, no.
He's like, I got an A- in my biology exam. Once again, this is a class I took in the 9th grade. He's a junior in all caps. She says, let's see what you learned. And I recoiled. I, like, threw my computer across the room as I was watching. Like, this is disgusting.
It was gross. No, it was gross. And, okay, we've brought this up many times. Every time they fuck, the windows are wide open. The blinds are not shut. They are not hiding anything. This was bound to happen.
Yeah.
A child sees this disgusting throwdown between a grown woman and another child. It's this, like, girl, like, this new neighbor girl.
Gabby is rightfully scared. This is where her fear kicks in, if we're going to go back to the beginning. She's terrified, and she is on the hunt for this girl in her little Porsche that she got last episode. She's rolling around the neighborhood. Where is this girl? I'm going to murder her. Second murder in 2 weeks. Yeah. Or second death in 2 weeks, I guess. And she doesn't find her, and so she heads home. And Carlos is already on it, though, and he's on eye level with this girl in their front yard, and Gabby's pissing her pants.
Yeah.
So the girl's name is Ashley. She's mute, basically.
I know. She does not say anything.
They call her shy, but she's just mute. Gabby gets on eye level and is like, hey, little girl. And the girl just stares, and that's where we leave it. And Gabby is like, can she speak? Because it would be beneficial if she couldn't.
Yeah, if this girl's mute, that's like best case scenario.
So then we see Ashley maybe later this afternoon, maybe tomorrow. We don't know. She's drawing on the sidewalk with chalk. Gabby rolls up. She's like, what a little artist. And I'm like, the lies we tell children.
I know. Honestly, watching Gabby interact with this child, I'm like, that's kind of how I feel like I interact with children. Like, I don't know what to, like, she's like, oh, are those flamingos? Like, trying so hard to, like, patronize this kid, and this kid's just not having it.
This is exactly how I interact with children. Yeah, I, like, never know what to say.
No,
everything,
man,
I say sounds dumb, and, like, it doesn't work out, and it's not connecting with that. Children don't connect with me. Or maybe I don't connect with children.
I don't know what it is with me. I don't know. I can't.
So we are obviously not kid people, but Gabby is trying really hard, though, and she talks about the flamingos, and she goes, are they kissing? And she goes in this whole
weird monologue thing
about kissing, and she's like, a lot of people kiss, like husbands, wives, and even friends. It's kind of like a high five on the lips. And sick. I'm like, I wish that, like, I can't even say it.
Wait,
I'll say it. I definitely was in a relationship that had infidelity, and I was just dying because I feel like this is almost a line that he would have fucking told me. Julia, like,
it was just a high five on the lips, girl.
Like, we're friends who just kiss. Yeah. It's like not a big deal. It's like a high five on the lips. Yeah. I was just high fiving you on the lips all the time.
Yeah.
And these other girls. So I was kind of dying. I'm like, this is some shit that men fuckboys would say. I'm like, they got this line from Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
Either way, Gabby,
she just, like, makes it so much worse. Like, that
it's all making it disaster. Worse. She pulls out, like, a doll from behind her bag. I don't know where this doll came from.
It's the scariest fucking doll. I was like, oh, my God. That's, like, if I were the little girl, I'd scream. I'd be like, get that fucking thing away from me.
Yeah.
It's cursed.
It's a Hawaiian princess. I didn't even write the name down. It was too complicated. But she gives her this Hawaiian doll. The girl is like, whatever. The girl, like, looks at her side eye, looks back to her chalk, and is like, I know what kissing is.
Yeah,
and I know that, like, friends don't high five on the lips.
Yeah.
You're insulting She is already smarter than Dawn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this girl, I bet she has a bank account.
She's hyper intelligent.
She's got one of those like kid bank accounts.
The doll is so disturbing. She's pissed about it. And Gabby sucks at this. Gabby rounds us up. She thinks she's done. She's nowhere near done. She says, well, if there's anything else you want, let me know. Ashley looks at her dead in the eyes and says, I want a bike.
This little girl has the concept of blackmail down, and this is the third episode, and this is like our third case of blackmail at this point.
Maybe we need to learn how to blackmail better.
I know, that's what all the suburbs are. It's just people blackmailing each other to death. That's literally it.
Gabby gets that bike and it calms her own nerves.
Yeah,
she gets her this bike, and it's not even a sick bike for a nine-year-old. It has like ribbons and a bell, and then
it's way too young. I feel like that girl's gonna grow out of it and like 6 months.
So she gets the bike out of the trunk and she's like, she wipes her hand. She's like, yep, done with that. And the girl is like, I don't know how to ride a bike. And Gabby stops.
Gabby's like, fuck.
Her whole world stops. Yeah. And the girl's like, show me how. She gets Gabby to help her learn how to ride a bike. And Gabby has questions about this at first. She's like, don't you have school? And this girl is like, bitch, I'm homeschooled.
I'm always here. Yeah.
She's like, I'm here all the time. And so Gabby's out there on the street in some heels helping this girl to ride her bike.
And they kind of get going, but yeah. Basically, Gabby realizes that this is not going to be over.
So that's where we leave off before the party. I guess we could hit on Paul really fast, suspect husband, before we go to Bree. Because
good idea.
He doesn't have much going on. We see Paul and his son at the dinner table, also reading the paper, kind of hearkening back to the beginning. The son, his name is Zach, and he says, why didn't you put the obituary in the paper for mom? And this is troubling. This is a troubling fact, and that is a big question. And his dad does not give a fuck.
No, and I think, like, Zach is just, like, this poor teenage kid, like, trying to understand why his mom killed herself, and his father is, like, being a fucking dickhead to him. And it, like, that's confused. Like, if I were Zach, I'd be like, what is happening? Like, I don't even. Yeah. And, like, they discuss, you know, Zach gets mad and lashes out and says, like, well, I'm not going to put your obituary in. And Paul says the craziest line. No, it's not even the craziest line of the episode, but this is a crazy line. And he says, assuming you outlive me, to his son, like, the most suspicious thing he could say. Like, what? It's so crazy. That's a crazy line.
I mean, that's dark for sure.
So dark.
And we get a timestamp that she's not even been dead a month. We catch up with them. The son's in the garage next time we see him, and he finds a box. It's the revolver that Mary Alice used to kill herself. Yeah. And he is fondling it. And I'm like, your fingerprints are all over that gun.
I know.
Zach addresses Paul, his dad, and he says, why would you keep this? And he says, in case we need it. And Zach's like, why?
Yeah. Is it to shoot me? Like, at this point, that's what I'd be worried about. Yeah,
Zach is asking all the right questions. Mm-hmm. I'm on team Zach. And he's like, we need to talk about mom. Paul comes in hot. He says, you're not taking your medication. Like, Zach is this token crazy son, painting him in this light.
Well, and it's weird. Like, I don't know. They're just like having this crazy moment. And then Bree rolls up.
Yeah. Knock, knock. Bree's at the door.
Yeah.
Zach answers and he's looking pretty rigid. And he's speaking through gritted teeth as Bree invites him to the dinner that honors his mother. And she's being
really sweet.
Zach can't accept going to this dinner because Paul rolls up behind him and says,
we're busy.
We busy. Yeah. We're here.
We got plans already.
And we see that Zach is holding the gun behind his back and Paul kind of takes it from him. And Bree is scared, I think.
She thinks something's going on. She deduces that something weird is happening.
Yeah, she can read a room.
Yeah,
unlike some of these other characters. But Zach blurts out, thank you for remembering my mother, and because she only died like last week.
Yeah.
And Mary Alice voices over that Paul gave his son something to calm his nerves that night, aka Xanax.
I want to see more of Zach. I'm looking forward to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Getting more of like this poor, like Paul's literally like creating a troubled child at this point. So I'm worried about him.
I'm worried about this household and this loss for him. But I'm glad that he has people like Bree. So after we're done with Paul, we see Bree, which will lead us into the dinner party.
Oh, that's right. We totally
How could we forget Bree Vandekamp?
I got excited for the dinner party.
I know. We're excited for all the ladies to get together. So Bree Vandekamp is getting ready to throw this party. But if we recall that her and Rex are having some issues and they are sleeping separately, she keeps waking him up at the crack of dawn so that their kids don't know that they're having marital problems, which is ridiculous because her kids totally know. Her kids are in on it. And Rex is sleeping like shit on this couch and complains how uncomfortable it is. And Bree, I think, has been growing more anxious as the episodes have drawn on about this marriage ending. And I think that is her biggest fear right now. And she invites him to sleep upstairs. And he says, we're in counseling and that would confuse things. And he literally hates her so much is what I wrote. He's like ready to sign those papers. He doesn't see, he's not giving off the signs of somebody that's willing to work on
it. He's not trying, period. He's just not trying.
Because Bree says that she misses him and he doesn't respond saying that he misses her too. He responds saying, I know you do. And he says, if I don't start getting sleep soon, I'll have to move upstairs out of exhaustion.
And this is when she whips out the wire cutters after he gets up and is like, she's like cutting the wires on the sofa bed and making them so they're poking. Like, she's literally, I like this. She's manipulating the situation and I respect it. I'm like, good move, sis.
Bree is strategic. She is smart. Mary Alice says that she's afraid of many things, but she is not afraid of a challenge. And she pulls those pliers out of her living room side table.
She planted them there. And I'm like, I love that.
I'm like, whoa, about to move mine there, I guess. We leave off with her fixing that bed to make it more uncomfortable, which love that for her. Mm-hmm. Love that thinking. But then she asks him about the dinner party at another time. Rex still hates her, doesn't want to go to the dinner party. She sets a strong boundary here. She says, we're throwing a dinner party. We're throwing a dinner party and you can't drink at this dinner party because when you drink, you talk too much and I don't want people to know about our marriage counseling.
And I think that's super reasonable. Like, he acts like that's annoying, but it's like, no, like, if I think it's fine. Like, if you don't want to tell everybody in the neighborhood that you're in marriage counseling, that's fine. Like, I don't know why he acts like that's so crazy that she wouldn't want that out.
It's not crazy. I think she could have gone about it in a different way. I think good on her setting the boundary, yeah. But she could have just been like more heartfelt, which we have seen and known as an issue for her, of just saying, hey,
be more emotional with it.
Yeah. She was just ordering him around and I like that she takes command. I don't think Rex likes taking commands.
No, he does not.
So I think we found the problem. But this is where he makes his comment about solving problems as opposed to covering them. Mm-hmm. She says, we tell people we're taking tennis lessons. I've already told the nurses at your work that that's what we're doing in case they get suspicious. Mm-hmm. So that is where we leave them off before we see them in counseling. They are talking about taking private sessions. That's what Dr. Goldfein suggests. Mm-hmm. And Bree stops everything. She's like, why do we need private sessions? She says she has no issues she needs to work on. And I love her commitment to this lie. You're like, I have no issues whatsoever.
I'm perfect. Yeah. Like, I love it. That's like the energy I want to have all the time.
So I'm like, just keep telling yourself that you're good. And
I mean, I think that she worries, like, if they start doing separate sessions, it's going to put them further apart. Because I think, like, what she's struggling with right now, and I think what we're all struggling with, is, like, what the fuck does Rex actually want?
Yeah, I think she's scared of that, and that's fine. Totally okay to be scared of that. And she says, she continues to double down on this lie. My only issue is that my husband wants to leave me. And I wrote, this is like reading a monologue from my own head. Like, my only problem is this isn't going right for me.
Yeah, like the only problem here is they don't want to be around me and I'm great. So yeah. What the fuck?
So the problem, they really have.
Yeah, I think it's their problem, not my problem, but okay.
So yeah, Rex is fuming at this per usual and he's advocating for himself, which I respect. He says, I need it. And that's his boundary. He needs this and he can't be bossed around by her. And I do like that for him. Mm-hmm. I think that's right for him. He says, I can't talk with you in the room with all that frigid energy. And she agrees to the single sessions. And as she walks out, she looks at Dr. Goldfein and she is like, if there is anything about prostitution, adultery, or internet pornography, I like that she specified internet. Like,
I know. She's like, magazine pornography is fine. Playboy's cool.
Playboy's cool. And I'm like, the bar is so low. Like, if those are the things that are going to draw issues for you.
Yeah, like, she's like, take the moral high ground, sir. Yeah, and then, it's like, whoa, okay.
And then she swings that tennis racket over her shoulder with sass and walks out. This leads us into our dinner party. Because the next time we see Brie, she is hostess with the mostest at this dinner. Things are spiraling rather quickly. Hey, housewives, are you with us? So Jordan and I realized that so much happens in episode 3 before we even get to the party that we wanted to split it into 2 episodes to make it a bit more digestible for you to listen to. We're sorry, we know this is abrupt, but the good thing is that part 2 of our recap for episode 3 is live right now on all the podcast platforms. It has the most iconic line ever dropped in it, so you really don't want to miss out. This dinner party is wild. It is off the chain. I totally would never want to be there, but you guys don't want to miss out on what goes down. So we hope to see you on part 2 of episode 3 recap. As we said, live now, tune in, and we're so happy that you're joining us. As always, if nothing else, know your neighbors.